28. Four lines on the third one. So we'll do 29.
Mātātīre pavana mālikāyā nivitau
Mātātīre pavana mālikāyā nivitau
Vinyāstaya sita chatūstaya bahumatye
Vinyāstaya sita chatūstaya
bahumatye Vatram bruvā kutilāyā sputane kamabhyam
Vatram bruvā kutilāyā sputane kamabhyam
Adhekshanina chamana drabhasam dadhano Mata, intoxicated. Dvi repa, bees. Vanamalikaya, with a garland of fresh flowers. Nivitau, hanging on the neck. Vinyashtaya,
placed around.
Asita,
blue.
Chatushtaya,
four.
Bahu,
hands.
Madhye,
between.
Bhaktram,
face.
Bruva, with their eyebrows. Putila, arched. Sputa, snorting. Nirga madhyam, breathing. Rakta,
reddish.
Ikshanina, with eyes.
Cha,
and. Manak, somewhat. Rabasham, agitated. Tadhano, glanced over. Translation of purple by His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Paraparamhans, Hari Gajakacharya, Ashtukara Sapashi Shimana Bhai Charanarinda Bhakti, Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The two doormen were garlanded with fresh flowers, which attracted intoxicated bees, and which were placed around their necks and between their four blue arms. From their arched eyebrows, discontented nostrils, and reddish eyes, they appeared somewhat agitated. Please repeat. The two doormen were garlanded with fresh flowers, which attracted intoxicated bees, and which were placed around their necks, and between their four blue arms. From their arched eyebrows, discontented nostrils, and reddish eyes, they appeared somewhat agitated. Purport. Their garlands attracted swarms of bees because they were garlands of fresh flowers. In the Vaikuntha world, everything is fresh, new, and transcendental. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha have bodies of bluish color and four hands like Narayana. I'll do 28. People said, indicated here. Probably tomorrow will be 30. So. Varya etayo niveshishur mishtaryo ash. Krishva purvajata purata braja kapatikaya shavatraye vishamaya munai svadrisya yei sancharanti abhihata vigata vishankaha. Translation. The great sages headed by Shanaka had opened doors everywhere. They had no idea of ours and theirs. With open minds, they entered the seventh door out of their own will, just as they had passed through the six other doors, which were made out of gold and diamonds. The great sages, namely Shanaka, Shanatan, Shananda, and Sanat Kumar, although very old in years, maintain themselves eternally as small children. They were not at all duplicious, and they entered the doors exactly as little children enter places without any idea of what it is to trespass. That is a child's nature. A child can enter any place and no one checks him. Indeed, a child is generally welcomed in his attempts to go places. But if it so happens that a child is checked from entering a door, he naturally becomes very sorry and angry. That is the nature of a child. In this case, the same thing happened. The childlike saintly personalities entered all the six doors of the palace, and no one checked them. Therefore, when they attempted to enter the seventh door, they were forbidden by the doorman, who checked them with their sticks. They naturally became very angry and sorrowful. An ordinary child would cry, but because these were not ordinary children, they immediately made preparations to punish the doorman, for the doorman had committed a great offense. Even to this day, a saintly person is never checked from entering anyone's door in India. Om Agyan Sridam Nasya Janam Janam Shalakya Kuchuram Inakam Dina Tachanesham Girinam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Parata Shri Bhashari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here, describing the four Kumaras now entering into the Vaikuntha palaces, and find themselves being checked by the doorman there upon entering. So these four little boys, as it says, they have no conception of ours and theirs, because they're situated in the spiritual platform of Brahma-Bhuta, where there are no dualities. So they became very angry when they were checked. Prabhupada said a child will also, it's natural for a child to become angry and sorrowful. So even more for these persons, because they're actually self-realized, they're actually this idea of ours and theirs actually didn't exist in them. There was, it says, a child sometimes, he can enter in any place and no one checks him. Indeed, a child is generally welcome in his attempts to go places. There was a, I can't remember, it was a bank or something like that, or anyway, a small child just walked in there and everybody was patting him on the head. And he walked right into the storerooms where they were counting all the money, and he just picked up a bag and he walked out again, right in front of everyone, and nobody noticed until later on they discovered him. So I guess his father had trained him up. But anyway, he walked in so innocently, and he had a big bag of money with him. So here, it's a very important story in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's used a lot to give the example of a mukta. The four Kumaras are considered muktas. Sukadeva Goswami is considered mukta, although that we understand now the greatest devotees, but previously they were muktas, and they usually give these examples. those who attained mukti or aspired to mukti. Sukadeva Goswami had mukti, didn't bother to come out of the womb for 16 years. The children, the four kumaras, they had mukti, they stayed like the small boys. So these examples are given of these four great sons of Lord Brahma who have mental bodies. They're the mental children of Brahma. And they're allowed to go everywhere. And they're completely freed from any kind of dualities. So this is one of the symptoms of a mukti. He has no conception of ours and theirs, or I and mine. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with Prakashananda Saraswati, must have been someone else. Then he would use Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He would quote this verse. Atmaramas Munaya, that verse, famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto. Talking about the moon, it's easily in Munaya, these great sages. So those who are Atmarama, self-satisfied. It says in Srimad Bhagavatam, even they become attracted to the Lord, somehow or another. Here the four Kumaras, you'll find out, they were attracted simply by the flavor of the scent of the tulsi leaves, chandan flowers, on the Lord's lotus feet. And Sukadeva Goswami, he became attracted to the pastimes of the Lord. He wanted to hear Bhagavatam. When he heard Bhagavatam describing the glories of the Lord, he came out of the womb. So that verse is saying, even those who are self-satisfied, Atmarama, they take pleasure in the Lord. They derive pleasure from the Lord in transcendental service. So this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was used a lot, and it's a very important point in our philosophy for defeating Mayavadi philosophers who say that Atmarama means that's the finish. Brahma Bhuta Prashanatma, you've reached that stage, that's finished, there's no more studying, no more austerity, no more penance, no more, it's all finished at that point. That was the purpose of all the austerity, penance, yoga, etc. To become self-realized, become self-satisfied. So that verse is pointing out, even those who have attained that stage, still they've gone on to become attracted to the Lord. Which now we have to consider why they're attracted. It seems like a duality. They're self-satisfied, but now they're attracted to something else. So there seems like a duality in the non-dual spiritual world. So then you have to ask the question, you know, what is that duality? And then you have to come to the conclusion of personalism and relationship and activity and sense engagement in spiritual objects. Spiritual sense is spiritual objects. So you have to come to the conclusion of how the spiritual world is full of variegated spiritual activities. So this is the verse we are using generally to defeat the Mayavadi philosophers, because he's a very authorized person. The four Kumaras are the oldest persons in the universe, apart from their father. So they're very authoritative. Sukadeva Goswami is also very authoritative. So both of these have become attracted to the Lord from that state of nirvana, kaivalya, oneness, Brahma Buddha Prashanatma. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, this is in the 6th chapter, this text 20-23. It says, in that state of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So, here, now a person who has actually realized Brahman, self-realized, he's describing the symptoms here that established thus, one never departs from truth. Upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. So therefore, Atmarama, you're self-satisfied, there is nothing else to gain, there is no greater gain, so nothing else to be achieved. So this was the Paul Kumara's position. They were free to go anywhere. They knew Vaikuntha was there, but why should we go there? We've got nothing else to gain. We're completely self-satisfied. If we go there, what's the difference? They understood the Lord was there. It was His planet and everything was there. But why bother to go there? We're completely self-satisfied. We have nothing to gain. If we go there, we're still going to be self-satisfied. We say, so why bother to go? But when they actually went there, and they actually met the Lord, they became attracted from the scent from His body, then they thought there is something more to gain. What is that? What is it that's exciting us that is more than our own self-satisfaction or self-realization? So this is natural. It's also natural that you feel there's no greater gain. That's also a natural feeling. Om Purnam Mada Purnam Idam. Everything is complete and perfect. So when you realize yourself, it's complete and perfect. Because we are part and parcel of Krishna, He is completely self-satisfied. So because we are part and parcel of that complete self-satisfied person, we also feel completely satisfied in the state of self-realization of Brahma-bhuta. So that feeling is is naturally there, that a person is self-satisfied because the Lord is self-satisfied. But the Lord is, He's truly self-satisfied, but also He's bhakti vatsala, He also takes pleasure in exchanging loving pastimes with His devotees. And that is bringing Him more pleasure. So Krishna is very complete. He is both Atmaram and He is full of all. And He gets pleasure from others also, from relationship. So this is also there in the living entity. So both things are there. In the state of self-realization, one is thinking there's nothing else to gain. But that's why it's very difficult to defeat Mayavadis or preach to Mayavadis. It's very difficult for them to accept that there's something beyond, because it says, you see here, there's no greater gain, we can become completely self-satisfied. So especially if they take to Shankara's philosophy, Shankaracharya's philosophy,
Prabhupada said, then you become doomed if you accept that. He said it can crack the heart even of a devotee if he reads that. If he becomes influenced by it, because it's very powerful and it's pointing on something that's quite natural, you know, self-satisfaction. It's something that's not artificial, it's there. And everybody obviously would like that, to be in a state of self-satisfaction. So those who are actually self-realized, they have a better chance to understand that point than those who are not self-realized. Because the persons who are on the path of self-realization, they've just got the philosophy. So they have to go by the philosophy. And that is ultimate oneness. There is no duality, so there's no question of relationship, spiritual relationship. That would jeopardize the philosophy of oneness by creating a duality. So very difficult for them to understand, because they've accepted that philosophy and it's true. Has truth in it at least. But those who are self-realized, it's easier to preach to those because they're actually experiencing what is Brahma for the Prashna. And it's stated somewhere, and I can't remember where it is. I can't find it either. I thought it was Mahaprabhu meeting with Pakshananda Saraswati. Anyway, it was the self-realized souls. He said some of us are actually self-realized. Many of us, all the sannyasis were there in Benares. Many of us are self-realized. Most are not, but there are a few self-realized sannyasis here. And those who are self-realized and feeling the self and living in the self and relishing and rejoicing in the self, as it says, although they're completely satisfied, is that there's something else there they can experience. There's something else. Those who are not self-realized, they can't experience it, but there's something, but we don't know what it is, but there's just something else there. But our philosophy doesn't allow anything else. Our monist philosophy, my God, it doesn't allow anything else, so we dismiss it. But we cannot deny there is a feeling that there's something else, that there is something else. And now, Mahaprabhu, now you're explaining this spiritual personality, spiritual relationship, devotional service, exchange, spiritual exchanges, and getting a higher taste. Now we can understand what that feeling was. It meant relationship, engaging in that Abhideya and getting the taste of love of Godhead. But our philosophy denied all that. So we were dissatisfied, but we couldn't dismiss the idea that there's something else. There's just something in the consciousness. There's something else to be. No. So therefore the self-realized, they could accept Mahaprabhu. Simply on philosophy, without realization, the others would have a difficult time to understand that, because they got no feeling of themselves or that there is something else. But when it was explained by Mahaprabhu what the other thing was, devotional service, loving devotion, then they immediately accepted, they appreciated it, yes, they. So what you then need, and then by their preaching, they converted all the other sannyasis as well. To become devotees. So this Prabhupada says the long purple. This perfection is characterized by the ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in. Sometimes it's said to see the self by the self, or I guess it means Prabhupada, but the pure mind. And other commentators say that you can see the self
or the Paramatma, through the Paramatma, who is the Supreme Self. So the idea is that this state of affection is called samadhi, when the mind is, nothing is functioning. There's two stages, as Prabhupada mentioned here. Sampragata samadhi and asapramagata samadhi. Sampragata samadhi, he's quoting Pantanjali's yoga system. The sampragata jata is, you're meditating on objects. It's like in the beginning of pranayama, you have to meditate on the abdomen, on the stomach, and all the different parts of the body. And for jnana, you meditate on knowledge and things like that. And the asampragyata samadhi is when you cut out all thinking, all the consciousness is not active. Not attached to anything, it's just still and stationary. So the idea is, because the senses are not functioning in that state of samadhi, when you reach that state of samadhi, because all the functions of the mind and senses have stopped, but still the Atma is not revealed, but you've stopped all the senses and mind, then how can you understand the self? With what are you going to understand the self, because you've suspended everything, even consciousness? So how are you going to become conscious of this? How are you going to know the self by the self? So it says, no, but at that time, the Paramatma, he must function. Then he actually gives the realization of the self and himself. This is the way it's working. I suppose when you attain that stage and you're qualified, by stopping all the senses, controlling all these senses, and then stopping all the functions of even the consciousness, then because you've got to have something to realize yourself, then the Paramatma, he comes and he reveals. Then that's the perfection for the living entity. Then he can actually relish and rejoice. He sees the self as the self. In other words, Prabhupada says, the pure mind, the self has its own senses. He has his own intelligence, his own senses, his own mind, which are all pure and transcendental. So they function at that time. And the other material mind intelligence, they don't function anymore. Krishna says, earth, water, fire, air, mind intelligence. You know, these are my eight material separated entities. So there's no need to use those anymore. So they're more or less dissolved. And then if one uses, he functions on the spiritual sense, the senses of the soul, the pure mind, pure intelligence, and pure identity as eternal servant of Krishna. So anyway, this is a nice situation. Being in this position of Brahma Guru Prasanna, which Prabhupada says, Krishna says at the end of that verse, about experiencing, you know, such a high happiness if nothing else is equal, gold and pebbles are the same. And then he finishes that verse we read, that this is indeed happiness arising from cessation of material something. It's happiness arising from cessation of material suffering. So that's all it is. This Brahma Bhuta Prasanna is so sought out for the Mayavadis. Krishna is showing how, telling you how important it is. He said, this is indeed happiness arising from cessation of material miseries. It's not much at all for Krishna. He said it's just absence of misery. What you're experiencing in that state of samadhi is absence of misery. It's not a big thing. the issue anyway. You're supposed to be like that. It's not a big. You're raving about this so much, but that's your natural constitution. It's not a big thing. But it's happiness arising from cessation of material miseries. Your miseries have stopped, therefore it feels so great. But actually, it's quite natural. This is how you should be. But now you're in that state. Now you engage that in Krishna service and enjoy loving exchanges and a much greater bliss than simply the self-satisfaction. So anyway, it's such a nice consciousness where everything is ever fresh, it says. The garlands are all fresh flowers because nothing, there's no time left, it doesn't get, nothing gets old. So the scent is always strong. It doesn't fade with time because time is absent. So everything is fresh there, so every moment is fresh and new. Even in the stage of self-realization, everything is fresh and new. Each moment is different. You're actually, because you're living in the present, you don't live in the past or the future. In the past and future, that becomes, it's all old. The past is gone, so it's old. The future, it may not be. You can't realize. The only thing you can realize is the present. So when you're actually living in the present, then it's where everything is fresh. We should be living in the present. But unfortunately, we have so many identities that we keep with us, which keeps us in the past. We identify with a certain family, certain mother and father, certain environment. That's always keeping me in the past. It's stopping me from being in the present, never fresh. If we can get rid of these attachments, and identification is past and future, then it's ever fresh. The mind is ever fresh, the spiritual mind. There's no great, nothing else to gain. Even while you're living in this and moving in the material world, there is no great to gain. You're actually very, very happy. And this is how we're supposed to be. We've accepted this unnatural position of unhappiness. And we're struggling hard to try to become happy. In the wrong direction, of course. Like the deer, the kasturi deer, he had that musk gland. It's a very, very sweet smell. So the deer is smelling, lovely smell, where is it coming from? And it's so intoxicating, he tries to, I must get that smell. And he's running here and there looking for it. He comes to the cliff, the edge of the mountain. He's so swarmy, he can smell that. He jumps and he falls in the mountain and he dies. So that's the example giving. We are searching after that happiness, running here and there. And what are we doing? We're just meeting death, keeping ourselves in a world of birth and death. But that happiness is actually within, the point is that Kasturi Deer has a scent within. But we have that actual happiness is within. You don't need to go anywhere and do anything. It's already there. So we should be searching there, not searching everywhere else for this, for a relationship with the sense object, for happiness. That is simply the path of death. So this is the illusion of this material world. We have the greatest happiness within, but nobody's searching for it. We're looking for much lesser happiness than that. Yeah, so everything is ever fresh, you see. Of course we can't comprehend this. Prabhupada would be often asked questions about the spiritual world. And he'd say, they're eating nice rasgullas and nice things like that, but everything is eternal and there's no death there. Everything is personal. So if you eat a rasgulla, does he die? What happens to him? And the Prabhupada said, he would answer yes. When you go there, you will understand. Otherwise, it's difficult for us to comprehend that everything is eternally fresh here in the spiritual world. But if we go there, we can see it.
And it's quite easy to go if you want, if you have the time, that sort of thing. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Samma Beta Bhakta Vedana ki, Hare Krishna. Any comment? You can only get it by association with the person who's got it. You can get true knowledge also, but if you associate with the person who has it, then that will actually reflect. We see Srila Prabhupada's example. And he was much more than a self-realized soul. He's actually a pure devotee of Krishna. His activities in this world, he was always an anxiety, you know. He realized he had a service to Krishna. In other words, he wasn't interested in his own happiness. He had a service to Krishna in his spiritual mouth, and that was his. And it's so much anxiety to make this movement. Prabhupada was an anxiety. No, you know, we think, oh, he must have been always in ecstasy. And he's always practically very, most of the time, he's very brave. Now we tell stories after, we're telling stories today, and we always make it kind of bright and funny. But actually, it wasn't so much like that. We elaborate on the stories a little bit, Prabhupada's passing, and they seem quite funny. But actually, they were very brave most of the time, Prabhupada. In his feelings, because he didn't come here to enjoy it. He didn't want to do that, he came to serve. And when you're in a mature world, it's a miserable place. Even you're serving Krishna, you still have to go through face all the so-called tribulations of the material world. Prabhupada said, I was so disgusted. I was disgusted with the Indian government. They won't give me any help. I'm disgusted. Everywhere I go, they said, no help. They only give impediments. He said, I'm so disgusted this day. So, but of course you can't find many self-realized Babajis who are quite jolly and happy because all they want to do is they stay in the Dharma and they just meditate on Krishna, they will speak the pastime to Krishna, and you see they're very, very happy. They don't have any responsibility in this world. So they're enjoying their spiritual bliss. You can meet a few of those devotees. Prabhupada had one godbrother, his name was the Kinshana Krishnadas. And he accepted Babaji Vaishnava from Lakshadanda Sarasvati Temple. But his only business was trying to start Hare Krishna playing the Ganga, singing Hare Krishna, wherever he went. And from the first day he came to the temple, all he wanted to do was chant Hare Krishna. And so Pakistan said, okay, chant Hare Krishna. And then all the other devotees, you know, what's he doing? He's only chants all day, he's not doing any service. And so Pakistan said, okay, he chant all day, and he sit down and chant. Nobody could do it. He said, you see, he can do it. So he was really, he was just enjoying himself and chanting Hare Krishna and carrying around picking up posters, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, whatever it was. Hare Nam, Hare Nam, he could give a look. And he would come to see Prabhupada sometimes. He was always chuckling. With every sentence he had a little chuckle. And Prabhupada really liked it. And when Prabhupada was in his life, Prabhupada was also chuckling. They would laugh together and have little children in that environment.
But he had no responsibility. I mean, he was preaching in his own way. He was just telling Ashtanga Hare Krishna and playing that way. So he was giving his association, but he was always joyful and happy. He didn't take on the responsibility of accepting disciples or managing a movement or having any fixed place or residence or strict salary. He was completely free. But he was enjoying himself, enjoying Ashtanga Hare Krishna. This Prabhupada had such a great responsibility for the welfare of others. So it wasn't, that Prabhupada was always in actually. So the idea is, if we can develop that attitude of helping others rather than their own satisfaction, then also we can become equipoised in this world. If you live for others, happiness is not your own, then you can become equipoised. So you can't live for others unless you're a devotee, unless you want to give Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's difficult to live for karmas. But for devotees, you can do it for the sake of devotees. So if you live for others, and you can preach to the innocent people. So in devotional field, if you live for others, that is your a way you can achieve that state of economic peace. Thank you.